When we grew up and went to school, there were certain teachers who would hurt the children any way they could. By pouring their derision upon anything we did, exposing every weakness, however carefully hidden by the kid.
What have we here, laddie? Mysterious scribblings? A secret code? No, poems no less. Poems, everybody! The laddie reckons himself a poet. Money gets back. I'm all right, Jack. Keep your hands off my stack. New car, caviar, four-star daydream. Think I'll buy me a football team. Absolute rubbish, laddie. Get on with your work. Repeat after me. An acre is the area of a rectangle whose length is one furlong and whose width is one cake.
Need no education. We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom. Teacher, leave them kids alone.
Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone.
All in all, it's just another brick in the wall.
One of the saddest lessons of history, my friends, is this. If we've been bamboozled long enough, we tend to reject any evidence of the bamboozle. We're no longer interested in finding out the truth. The bamboozle has captured us. It's simply too painful to acknowledge, even to ourselves, that we've been taken. Once you give a charlatan power over you, you almost never get it back. Carl Sagan. Good evening on this Wednesday night. Jeffrey Bennett with The Edge of Darkness. This is at least 2, maybe 3 weeks in a row that we've not dealt with health-related issues. It's not that I don't care to, it's just that there are other things that have taken over. Oh boy. As it ever. We don't seem to care much about anything anymore. We've given up on everything. Our country, the economy, the world, and ourselves to some extent. But we still have hope, don't we? I don't know about you, but I have little interest in much of the crap going on with this disaster that we've made of our lives. Frankly, I'm worn out, especially by this bastion of BS that we call America. My insensitivity is based on the overwhelming negativity in this country. Look, I realize that happiness does not sell newspapers or increase advertising revenues. Good news doesn't draw people to the television or the radio. Advertising funds these billion-dollar organizations and allows them unfettered power and influence. If happiness sold papers or advertising space, we'd all be some smiling mammy jammas, wouldn't we? programming, my friends. Plato. Do you remember Plato? the philosopher, not Mickey Mouse's dog, Plato once said that the price of apathy toward public affairs is to be ruled by evil men. But he also said that if you do not take an interest in the affairs of your government, then you are doomed to live under the rules of fools. Plato lived from 428 to 348 BC, about 2,400 years ago. Fascinating to think that an old man that lived 2,400 years ago could have insight into modern problems. Ain't history a bitch? Oh, you should read history sometimes. You might discover that the issues we face now are not new. They're the same problems humanity faced from the beginning of time. I find that our inability to learn and to apply the lessons of history is a crushing disappointment. Now, archaeologists estimate that civilization is about 6,000 years old or so. And we've been taking notes, we call it history, for about 5,000 of those years. And my friends, I can promise you not much has changed. And the real bummer is that we haven't learned crap in all that time. Oh, sure, we've made almost everything easier, faster, prettier, more innovative, except ourselves. But we've ignored the causes and the impetus of said problems. We face an onslaught of useless information designed to keep us distracted, under control, separate us from what we have. From where I sit, our elected and well-paid representatives intend to take what little remains and make us wards of the state. I don't know about you, but it makes me want to flee to somewhere better. But frankly, where? Of all the other possible places on this planet, America is still the least worse alternative. But unfortunately, rather than the lesser of the evils, we have the evil of the lessers. Music. It always returns to music, doesn't it? Charlie Daniels, in a song, once told us that the devil went down to D.C. looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind. And he was willing to make a deal. And the greedy politicians formed a queue. But my friends, as bad as things are here, they're far worse everywhere else. As they say, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. Am I wrong? The devil in this commentary today is not Lucifer, the fallen angel of light, but the corporate cabal that owns and runs this country. They are the devil incarnate. You know, I've nearly lost my give-a-damn several times. But then I remember my oath of enlistment from so damn many years ago to serve and protect this glorious country, defend this nation against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And so here I am, still keeping my promise. That promise I took on November the 7th, 1965. But you see, the problems are those inconvenient matters that interrupt normality. But our standard is all about problems in our case. It's what we hear all day long. Yeah, even right here on RBN. My insights tell me that we're buried in the stupendous volumes of information. We're concerned with the munité, not the cause. It's essential to know how things work, but not necessary to understand the intricacies of each topic. Ah, my friends, but therein lies the value of classical education. Classical studies, you see, are intelligently and purposefully designed curricula to guide us toward a broad understanding of essential subjects. I'm proud to have survived the obstacle course called a parochial primary and secondary education. But we speak guardedly about what passes for education today. None of us want to appear on the FBI's domestic terrorist watch list. I've got grandchildren now in high school, college, two in college, one graduating high school in a matter of 2 months. But are they not, in fact, the primary, the education, indoctrination camps? As Plato warned us, this is the price of apathy. You see, it is essential to know when enough is enough. We're barraged with too much information every moment of every day. And so I've got to make a conscious effort to disconnect from the media to avoid information overload, to clear my BS filters. No, I've reached that point. I don't turn on the television to watch the news. I don't turn on the radio to listen to the so-called news. And I don't listen to one other single broadcaster on this network for the same exact reasons. I need to clear my BS filters, kept and cleaned out. You see, the adjunct to quantity, my friends, is the quality of the information. My chosen profession has some pertinent sayings like garbage in, garbage out. It's not too difficult to understand the intent, and yet trash is what we consume as people in this nation. Oh, there is boundless BS assaulting us every moment of every day from every angle. And the agendas and the motives are to perpetuate the lies of merely a moment ago, and then initiate the lies about to be told. Isn't it in fact all about our programming? Our inundation with information from the media is quite similar, except that there are no filters, my friends. We're bombarded each and every moment of every day with nothing more than manipulated data. It's all adulterated. Yes, I intend to convey that someone screws with it before we see it. Is that just a little blunt? Oh, my friends, you have no clue how much I've cleaned up the language of this presentation tonight. Very twisted language. I don't disagree with the author's choice of words, because I feel just the same anger. There was a man who we've brought up on numerous occasions lately, named Joseph Goebbels, who once said that if you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it. The lie can be maintained only for such time as the state can shield the people from the political, economic, and or military consequences of the lie. You see, my friends, it's easy to fall into a rut, or even a routine, watching or listening to the same channel each and every day reinforces programming, which is the intent of organizations that offer what we loosely term news. The opinions and interpretations they promote aid this programming by supporting the messages that agree with the viewer's political choices and leanings. You know, I can remember a time when reporting was subjective. If there were different sides, controversy or opposition to the story, they were presented and discussed. Those shows didn't preach to the viewer. They didn't tell us what to think and how to feel about each and every story. And yet the news that we get today is all theater. Nothing but theater. And because of it, I can believe that we're wandering in the wilderness, not unlike the Old Testament Jews. The Jews had the desert. We have a wilderness of our own creation. And maybe that's the perfect simile for this five-part series that we're introducing you here tonight. Where Americans are wandering in a wilderness of pure apathy. You see, the Jews allegedly wandered the desert for 40 years. Their leader had a message of hope to encourage them. And the story recounted that he would never see the promised land, even though Moses was told to guide them. And yet he persisted. You see, God promised the Jews a nation that they called Israel. God's concern was for his children. Our promise comes from the cabal. And their concern is wealth and power to the exclusion of all else. And yet we persist. But we hold fast to the lie of better days if we just stay the course. My friends, I submit to you that we have traded God for disingenuous leadership. There was a film done in 1836 called My Man Godfrey that dealt with financial and social inequities. And it was a dialogue between two forgotten men. And they discussed the promise that, quote, prosperity is just around the corner. I wish I knew where that corner was. So the question becomes, around which corner is our prosperity? We could fill the Grand Canyon with the promises that we're chasing, my friends. Each is built on the previous lie and expands the scheme to perpetuate a new lie. Because we are addicted to hope. Or as it's been referred to in the past as hopium. A narcotic version of belief. And various religious texts from the Bible to the Quran contain or reference this passage in some form or another, which states, "Hear this now, O foolish and senseless people who have eyes but do not see and ears who do not hear." We've heard that statement many, many, many times in our lives. It deals with preconceptions blinding our views. But unfortunately, our addiction to hopium blinds us to the truth that is right before our very eyes. We see, but we allow hope to obscure the reality. We hear, but ignore it because it contradicts what we want to hear. And because of it, we choose to ignore 5,000 years of history and the sage advice of great and learned people attempting to warn us. And their experiences and understanding of causes could serve as an example. If we would only listen, if we would only learn. My friends, our solution is to find trustworthy sources and leadership because ours is sinking. We must examine their past examples, track record of successes and failures. We must all judge for ourselves, but be aware of the false prophets with grandiose and unfillable promises. You see, if it sounds too good to be true, it usually is. How long will we continue to wander through our wilderness? A quote by Will Rogers sums all of this up. When he stated that there are three kinds of men, the ones that learn by reading, the few who learn by observation, and the rest of them have to pee on the electric fence and find out for themselves. My friends, haven't we seen enough yet? After all, we have 5,000 years of examples and a couple of hundred years of of our own to reference. Copy. Charles Dickens. We invite you to join us tomorrow night for Chapter 2 of Charles' new series, The Wilderness. It will continue on for 5 chapters. Charles is quite a profound writer. I'm thankful that we've had this. He's speeding up the process. Rather than getting a chapter every 2 or 3 days, I'm getting 1 chapter every day. I can't work that fast. But all that he has said is so profound. And I see it every day. And I breathe it every day. And I gag it every day. Conversations I've had with other people have been astounding. We talk about those in the past who predicted our future. Something was sent to me later this afternoon after a conversation I had with my friend Dr. E. And we're going to make that a part of tomorrow's program as well. Unbelievable. I'm going to take just a few moments and share something with you very quickly, because I will have no further time to do this. I want to give you some very brief market updates today. And they are not going to be exact. I know for a fact that they're already off. Rhodium closed at 18,300 today. Palladium up $1 at 2204. Platinum up down $1 at 1989. Platinum just keeps on tanking. Silver down a nickel in the after hours. Gold, I can guarantee you the figures that aren't being quoted right here are not proper. Gold sitting currently at about $1,937 an ounce. Now, I share that with you because, as some of you know, last Thursday, I introduced a new special offering that we had through Sierra Madre Precious Metals. And it came from a vault of one of our very old clients. It was a small selection of nearly 1/5 ounce European gold coins, the most internationally recognized historical and legal tender design ever available in gold coin. And this was the 20 franc French rooster, minted from 1899 to 1914. Amazingly recognized, an exquisite, one of the most widely circulated and owned gold coins of its era. Well, this is over 100 years of age. And as with most European 5th ounce coins, these contain 0.1867 of an ounce of net pure gold, about the same size as a U.S. 5-cent piece. And the French 20-franc rooster is one of the most affordable and therefore popular of all our classic European gold coins, and is ideal for investors who have the ability to acquire coin. These coins are being offered in brilliant, uncirculated condition, over 100 years of age, providing an amazing amount of gold for the dollars spent. Now, when we first went on the air to offer these last Thursday, we had some I miscalculated something. We had 120 pieces. 120 pieces. The client had never taken out of the tube. Still brilliant uncirculated. I was offering them in 5 coin sets for $2,015 per set plus a flat $15 on the shipping. Half of that original thing has been sold. They're done. They've been committed. We still have half that many to go. I've still got 60 coins left. What's 60 divided by 5? I've got something that I kind of did up here incorrectly. 60 divided by 5. We've got 12 sets left. That's it. When they're gone, they're gone. I've not been able to get these for years. The supplier I used to acquire all my foreign gold from and spent some time behind bars, when he got out, became a crook. And I cut off my relationship with the guy, which is sad because he was a massive supplier. Now, here's something interesting. I'm going to share with you right now. If you're interested in a five-piece set, maybe you want to get two of the five pieces or three of them, whatever the case may be. If you have access to a cell phone, I'm going to invite you to send me a text right now. Remember, it's $2,015 per set of five coins plus a flat $15 shipping. Whether you order one set or buy five sets or buy all 12 sets, it doesn't matter. My number is 602-799-8214. I can almost promise you tonight is going to be the last night we're going to have these available, but one never knows. Crazy things that happen. 602-799-8214. For those of you who have my email address, kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. You can also send me a quick email. Let me know how many of those sets you're interested in. It's first come, first serve. But I'm about ready to hit you with a shocker. If one person contacts me and wants to purchase the entire 60-piece collection, I'm looking at a picture that I took last night of them right now. One full roll, 60 pieces of brilliant uncirculated 20 Frank Angels. You're going to save $7.55 per coin. You're going to basically save them $478. But it's not cheap. $23,907 for the entire roll. That is a discounted price from what you're going to find on the market right now. It is astounding. If you're looking for a phenomenal gold option, small pieces, barterable, tradable, it's going to put you in control. Anyone out there who can afford it, I'd strongly urge to grab this package right now. Because the minute one person calls and wants one package, you'll not be able to buy this package of 60. So, 602-799-8214. You can text while I'm on the air. Don't call because I can't answer. It's a phenomenal package. Now, and I would say no break today, Michael. Take a break, my friend. You've had a rough day today, I'll tell you that. No break. Well, that's okay. That's okay. I'm dancing with Kim Novak. I love it. My friends, some months ago, I thought that I'd made a startling discovery that a good friend and a phenomenal writer, Al Benson, I'd received my last post from him in mid-July. And he wrote nothing afterwards, and I was under the... I knew he'd been having some health issues, and I thought that Al had passed away. And all of a sudden, out of the clear blue, several weeks ago, I began receiving notices from him again. I've had to go back into several websites and remove his biography, which referenced the fact that he had passed away. I'm so thankful he is not. He is quite ill. He and his wife are both in a home. They're being cared for. And it's difficult, but his writing is getting better and better and better. He's concentrating more and more on the education issue in this country. And let's face it, we discussed the education issue in the earlier commentary by Charles Dickens. More and more people are waking up to this fact that we're now dealing with socialist teachers' unions. Kind of interesting. I've got a couple of pieces of L's published today, and one of them was an NEA, National Education Association, so-called get-together. And this cartoon by Michael Ramirez shows the NEA sign up there, National Indoctrination Association. And a student looks up at the person speaking, says, indoctrination is spelled with an I. You see, the National Education Association meets every year, my friends, at a big convention in some big city, and scads of teachers show up for the big event. So one big chance every year to tell us peons what we should support, what we should hate, how we should live. And then an agenda is presented showing all the things the NEA is for and against. In the past few years, they've presented agendas that the late communist dictator Hugo Chavez would have loved. Many of the issues they choose to address have little or nothing to do with education, but everything to do with the leftist worldview they promote. I think that Al made a mistake. Hugo Chavez was not a communist dictator. Hugo Chavez was an American-born citizen who I had a lot of respect for, but I may have to talk to Al about that one and say, you better figure out which one it is. Mistakes can be made, my friends. You know, an awful lot of people have heard a little about the NEA. Oh, we all know it's some sort of a teacher's organization. That's about the sum total of the knowledge. They don't know how long it's been around. They don't have a clue as to what it really does. Only that many of their kids' teachers belong to it. Oh, the NEA likes it that way. Right? You got it, James. You're covered. We'll talk after I got off the air, my friend. In all fairness to public school teachers, there are some that are not in favor of this teachers' union. We're not in favor of any teachers' union, but their opposition is generally ridiculed or ignored. Oh, my wife was a member of the public teachers' union at one point in time. And when she realized it was totally against where she stood politically and otherwise, and that her union dues were being spent for some nefarious purposes, she dropped out of the union. Al knew a guy in Indiana several years ago that was a public school teacher but was not in favor of a strike that the teachers' union wanted to engage in. So when they struck, he continued to go to school and try to teach. And his fellow teachers in characteristic union charity splashed black paint all over his white car. And when that failed to keep him away from the classroom, they slashed his four new tires for him. Oh, this is the kind of thuggery you read about in the papers, which papers try to paint the teachers' unions as champions of liberty and equality, more education, more money for the young and the downtrodden, unless you happen to disagree with what they want to do. That's a different story. Samuel Blumenfeld, in his informative book, NEA, Trojan Horse in American Education, gave us a view of the NEA that is seldom presented anywhere and almost never to the American public at large. Blumenfeld noted that at one point the president of the New York Teachers Association told a gathering that, quote, I trust the time will come when the government will have its education department just as it now has one for agriculture, for the interior, for the Navy, etc. Blumenfeld continued by saying, and thus it should come as no surprise that the call for a federal Department of Education was made at the very first organizational meeting. And the educational socialists had this agenda in their sights for a long time before you ever heard a damn thing about it. And the socialists didn't get what they wanted right away, and the country wasn't ready to accept that federal control of education, but they were planning for it. And they finally got it through Jimmy Carter in the late 1970s as a payback for union teacher support. Of course, Ronald Reagan claimed he wanted to disband it, but he never did. More conservative talk while the liberals got all the action. You see, my friends, our Constitution, for all the problems that it had, gave the federal government no role whatsoever to play in education in this country. So they just usurped the power and did it anyway. Something that they're very good at doing. I mean, come on now. Knowing how the federal government works, is anyone really surprised? One of the big election issues in recent elections in Virginia was who would control what the kids were taught. The state? Or the parents? And so the newly elected governor there seems to be in favor of parental control and input, but I believe he's getting flack from the teachers, who seem to want the parents kept in the dark. And so the battle continues. For you see, as long as you have a system of public education that is ultimately controlled from Washington, it will never end. Don't let us kid ourselves, my friends. Local control of public schools is a myth. The fool, the naive. Now think about that. Public schools. Why? For the salvation of the state? I mean, often public school officials brag loudly that they do it all for the kids. Some of them may honestly believe that. It's what they've been taught to say, and if they just say it long enough, it becomes fact in their minds. And they just parrot the line to, they hope, believing parents. And they come off sounding like paragons of self-sacrificing virtue. If you've ever witnessed striking public school teachers in Chicago marching the streets asking for more money just a few days before school starts in the fall, you know it's a lot of horse bucky. If you've ever seen the wage scales of teachers in some cities, you realize that self-sacrifice has nothing whatever to do with it in many cases. Once again, Samuel Blumenfeld, in his book NEA, Trojan Horse in American Education, Blumenfeld has lowered the boom on all of this self-sacrifice twaddle. On page 13, he states that, quote, it was in 1829 that Josiah Holbrook launched the Lyceum Movement to organize the educators of America into a powerful lobby for public education. Was Holbrook a covert Owenite? That would have been a disciple of socialist Robert Owen. Circumstantial evidence seems to indicate that Holbrook was. And if the socialists decided to further their cause by working through the instrument of public education, we can then understand why the system had such appeal to socialist bias for as long as anyone can remember. I mean, indeed, public education was to become the socialist primary instrument for promoting socialism. Do you get that? Public education was a major vehicle for promoting socialism. Now, chew on that for a while. And you'll find that all this self-sacrifice crap isn't worth doodly squat. But the early socialists in this country readily admitted that. And in 1829, feminist and socialist Francis Wright lectured in this country. And she spoke in favor of a national system of education. And who would be the beneficiary of that system? The students? Hardly. And speaking of public education, Ms. Wright said quite forthrightly that that measure, know it, it is national, rational, Republican education, free for all at the expense of all, conducted under the guardianship of the state, at the expense of the state, for the honor, the happiness, the virtue, and the salvation of the state. Public education is for the salvation of the state. My friends, that's quite a socialist mouthful. Again, we go back, we read what she said. It was far removed from any concern for individual students. Rather, it was to promote statism, or statism, as it were. Wright was at least honest back in 1829. She told it like it was, and still is. Oh, Karl Marx would have loved it so. For she promoted public education 19 years before he did in his Communist Manifesto. Now remember now, we're talking about 1829 in this country, not 1929, but 1829. Just 42 years after our Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia. It's pretty early for socialist subversion in this country. When most folks have been taught to believe that we never had any problems with socialism and communism, and not here. Not until FDR got into office. Folks, does it begin to occur to you that we've been lied to? Many of our so-called historians are complicit by their sin of omitting this history so we would not know. Remember, Francis Wright said public education was formed for the benefit and salvation of the state. And it is now being used to teach the students to be servants of the state. Seems to me that we fought a war for independence so that we could be a free people under God, not the servants of a socialist Caesar. Al Benson Jr. It's interesting. Al's writing becomes shorter, but more to the point. In every respect, more to the absolute point. And it's interesting because, what do we got here? Thank you, dear. Your insert will be tomorrow. My friend Southern up in Canada says, talk about John Dewey. The state, the whole state, and nothing but the state, so help me, God. You know, it is interesting to the two pieces of Al Benson that we published and have shared with you tonight. I posted them on FederalObserver.com. Now, I don't normally do that because Metropolis is, in effect, our education system, our education site. And I will tell you that I will post these on Metropolis later because I want the people who go to Metropolis to understand exactly what we're dealing with. Oh, I could do a little thing and take them back to Federal Observer, but there's no need for that. I want it over there. And I am going to publish it there. Because I want the parents to understand how their students are being guided and manipulated. Now, what's very interesting to me is if we go to metropolis.cafe and we begin to get into, as an example, the section called profiles. And I believe that if we go into profiles, we'll find a wide range of things. And there's biographical related sketches on Martin Luther King and George Washington and Einstein, Davy Crockett, Edwin Stanton, would-be dictator, who was Lincoln's Secretary of War. But as you begin to delve into it, there's a marvelous piece about Charles Dickens, America. Not my friend Charles Dickens, but his great-great-grandfather, talking about the Civil War. Profound. There's portraits of Karl Marx. Marvelous piece here about a woman saying what she can teach us about racism. Marvelous black lady, William Mack Lee, body servant of General Robert E. Lee. Stuff in here on Thomas Paine, Harry Truman. An article we actually published sometime in 2012, entitled When Charles Dickens Fell Out with America. Pretty profound. I've got some editing to do in there. More stuff on Einstein. But you'll also find some other interesting pieces in here about some of the education people that we've talked about tonight. There's a piece I posted on Hank Aaron, a home run king who defied racism. I published that the day that he passed away. Interestingly enough, I also published a piece on Walter Williams entitled Suffer No Fools. Fools, days after he passed away. Amazing stuff. Interesting piece on Hedy Lamarr. You may not know the story about Hedy Lamarr. Go there, take a look. Pieces on John Brown. More pieces on Davy Crockett. Piece on Whitey Ford, who passed away at the age of 91. Why are all these? Because it's part of American history. An amazing interview with Ayn Rand by Mike Wallace. But who are the people who were the founders of our education system as we know it? Some of these people we've talked about tonight. For this very instant moment, I can't tell you. Oh, I got another one. Nancy Green, the original Aunt Jemima. Learn the story about that. Learn the story about Nancy Green and Aunt Jemima. Interesting piece called Moses, also known as Charlton Heston. Another piece in here about Charles Dickens writing the best of times and the worst of times. Stuff in here about Margaret Sanger. She was a racist. Emma Goldman, who claimed that patriotism is a menace to liberty. A communist she was. So many more things. And I do apologize. I cannot think of the names right this second. Gladys West, woman who invented the global positioning system. History of Rose Wilder Lane. You remember the TV show, Little House on the Prairie? Jesse Jackson's surprisingly harsh words for schools in 1977. Profound stuff to read. story of Ira Hayes. Sad fate of the Native American who helped raise the flag at Iwo Jima. I shared this story with a Native American friend of mine. Different tribe. Knew nothing about what I was talking about. So much more. Aaron Burr, Thomas Edison, Cicero, Rome's greatest politician. All I can do is suggest you go spend some time there. There's much that you'll learn. I like this picture. Abe Lincoln laying in his grave. How Ulysses S. Grant came to be seen as a failure. Another piece by Al Benson, Sheridan the war criminal. Marvelous story about Jack Hinson, a Civil War sniper hell-bent on revenge. Goes on and on and on. Ah, even I was wrong. It was not Hugo Chavez. Cesar Chavez. American born. Marvelous story about honoring this American hero. And there's so much more you can find. Much on Robert E. Lee, Thomas Paine. Goes on and on and on. And I do apologize, I'm totally blanking. John Dewey, Horace Mann. These are people you need to learn about their backgrounds, who they really were, what they really stood for. Profound. Absolutely profound. God, how I miss John Taylor. God, how he's been gone 4 years now. More on Cicero, enemy of the state, friend of liberty. You get to see both sides of all of this. Both sides. It's a marvelous letter written by Jackie Robinson. George Orwell, our forgotten prophet. How much these people all saw. They envisioned. John Corcoran, a teacher who could not read. How he kept his illiteracy a secret, managed to con his way into his 17-year teaching career before finally coming clean and turning his life around. More on Cicero. Story about a marvelous woman named Linda Brown, a little girl at the center of the 1954 Brown versus Board of Education Supreme Court decision. What a powerful, powerful story it is. John Dewey, fraud. Something I originally posted on October 1st of 2012. You need to read it. There's so much more of things like this. So much more. Nothing else. I love teaching history. It's too important not to. Important to know where we came from. Oh, Josie Wales? You know, there really was Josie Wales, but he didn't go by that name. He was known as Bushwhacker Bill Wilson. Yeah, you want to take a look at that. Lincoln? Socialist? Absolutely. So much stuff. So much stuff. And a story about one of my family, two of my family members, my David Selleck, S-E-L-L-E-C-K, a colonist, Boston, 1633. My grandfather's favorite uncle, Samuel W. Cole, served in the Civil War. Unfortunately, on the side that I don't agree with, but that's okay. There's much to read, much to study, much to learn here. Take advantage of it. Each and every bit. John Dewey, the truth is whatever you and I agree it to be. Yeah, right. Anyway, it's about time for me to bail on out of here. If you want to take advantage of the French 20 franc sets, get a hold of us now. Send us a text or send us an email. You take care of yourselves. We'll see you tomorrow, and there will be more to cover. Good evening.
It brings back a memory evergreen. I'm with you once more under the stars. And down by the shore an orchestra's playing. And even the when they begin the to live it again is past all endeavor, except when that tune clutches my heart. And there we are, swearing to love forever and promising never, never to part. What moments divine, what rapture serene, till clouds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean. So don't let them begin the beginning. Let the love that was once a fire remain an ember. Let it sleep like the dead desire I only remember. When they begin the beginning, oh yes, let them begin the beginning, make them play, till the stars that were there before return above you, till you whisper to me once more, darling, I love you. And we suddenly know what heaven we're in when they begin the beginning. When they begin the beginning.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our Easy 4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.